decades ago, 6-year-olds Alex and Anna vanished for 36 hours while on vacation in Palm Springs. They returned unharmed, but where they were and what happened to them was unexplainable, igniting the media and country in a firestorm of conspiracy theories. The event forged a bond between Alex and Anna, lasting through their adolescence until the never-ending spectacle of their disappearance tears them apart. Flash forward to today, a mysterious transmission, a signal from the solar system is detected and growing stronger, prompting Alex to reunite with Anna. What is the signal, and does it have anything to do with their childhood disappearance? Joining me now to talk about this thrilling and original story is author Meg Charlton. Meg, friendship, family, reliability of memory, the possibility of extraterrestrial intelligence. How did all of these things become this story?
Thank you so much for that lovely summary of the book. You know, I first came up with kind of the very early seeds of this story back in 2015 when I was down in Roswell as part of a documentary film crew. And part of what inspired me was kind of hearing the stories of different experiencers and also seeing the kind of conflicting poles of skeptic and believer, and realizing that both sides can kind of cling to this very dogmatic vision of the world, this very rigid narrative about what did or didn't happen. And I was interested in kind of what the lived experience would be of someone who almost went on a conversion toward agnosticism, somebody who found a way to somewhere in between those poles and was able to kind of sit with the real you, the unidentified, in their own lives. And those questions about reliability and memory and friendship and family, you know, they all are obviously being grappled with for these characters at this very extraordinary level, given what they went through. But to me, they seemed very universal. You know, we all have these memories, especially from early childhood, that diverge with or conflict with those of the people that we love and the people who supposedly went through those experiences with us. You know, you can grow up in the same house and yet end up with completely different interpretations of what that experience was like. And so I think I was really interested to explore that incredibly kind of common and basic reality of the unreliability of all of our memories through the experience of the experiencers, through these people who are really called to account for their memories because the things they describe kind of push at the edges of consensus reality. And that felt like a really interesting space to play in as a novelist.
I'm so glad you brought that up about memory, because I wanted to talk about that. Memory, storytelling, and truth. So much of this story relies on what Alex and Anna remember or don't remember from their disappearance. I found myself thinking about what I remember from being young, and it's very blurry. It's maybe just bits and pieces of people and things. How did you work this into the story? How did you work memory and truth in pushing the story forward?
Yeah, I mean, something that I remember learning that really sort of unlocked the story for me was this concept of childhood amnesia, that there is this kind of universal neurological reset that people go through when they're about five, where it becomes incredibly difficult to remember really anything aside from a few little blurry bits from before that age. And that idea that there's a kind of built-in lacuna in all of our minds, that there's this space that none of us can go, was so interesting to me, and felt like such a powerful engine for a story, because I don't want your listeners to think that we don't get some kind of answer or resolution for what happened to Alex and Anna. We do. And I hope it feels, surprising and alien and like something that rejects kind of everything that they could have conceived. But at the same time, I really wanted to think about the engine of irresolvability, sort of what it would mean for two people to not share their memories of this key event in their lives, and how the kind of way that that event might have knit them together, that the ways their memories start to fray could ultimately tear them apart. And I think that, you know, all relationships have origin stories, friendships included, and I wanted to think about what might happen if that origin story got poked and prodded and tested. Would it shake the foundations of this friendship? And would they be able to rebuild if it was kind of destroyed?
This is what we're reading on KAXE. We're talking with writer Meg Charlton about her new debut novel, Voyagers.
I think we would be remiss to not talk about the extraterrestrial, the alien aspects of your story. It feels like we're at a moment in time where we've got Project Hail Mary, the movie coming out and being wildly successful. We've got the timing of this is crazy. Disclosure Day, the movie, the Spielberg movie, just came out this weekend. Saw some similarities in what I know of the plot for that story with your book. So I'm just like, wow, this is all kind of converging. So it seems like there's this interest, and I don't feel like it ever has gone away, the interest in extraterrestrial life. But it feels like right now it's heightening. Artemis 2 mission around the moon. So what do you think our ongoing fascination about space says about us, and including your book too?
Yeah, I mean, the timing really is kind of eerie with all with you know sort of lining up with the release of Disclosure Day and Artemis and Project Hail Mary. And there's another UFO book that just came out a few weeks ago that I'm really excited to read called Take Me With You. And I think that the thing about aliens, at least that drew me in, was kind of that existential question of, are we alone? And I think something Disclosure Day talks about that I was really interested to see was this question of faith and of what it would do to kind of our belief about our place in the universe if we discovered that there was other intelligent life. And it made me think about Jimmy Carter, who, you know, sort of sits at an interesting intersection in that he was this incredibly devout Christian, but he also, you know, sent out the Voyager missions, that he also saw a UFO allegedly when he, you know, in back in 1969. And something really moving about that Jimmy Carter experience is that actually he gave an off-the-record interview or off-the-record conversation to NPR later when one of your reporters asked about his UFO sighting, which he actually reported to a UFO group. And they asked if they found intelligent life in the universe, if it would sort of shake his belief in God. And he said no, because, and this quote really moved me, like, God's hands are big enough for both of us. And I think there is in aliens and in UFOs this interesting confluence of both this conspiratorial thinking, which is kind of, you know, beginning to wear away and eat away at a lot of trust in our society, and also this incredible amount of kind of optimism and wonder and awe and hope that I think aliens are in many ways, you know, a belief that there is someone out there, that there is someone watching, that there is someone that we can join, you know, as they put it in that Voyager letter that was sent out, you know, a some sort of society of intergalactic civilizations. And I think that so much of the allure of UFOs is about wanting to recognize and sort of see Earth from the outside. At least that is for me, to sort of see it the way the Artemis crew saw it, see it the way the Earthrise photo saw it, sort of recognize that we are, you know, this dust mote suspended in a sunbeam, this little pale blue dot, and to kind of see ourselves the way that an alien might, and to see our specialness, even as we would recognize that we aren't unique and we aren't alone. So I think that there's this kind of interesting, yeah, tension between both this desire for a story that makes sense about the world, this sort of conspiratorial thinking, and then a conspiracy or a belief that would kind of open the world up and make it bigger and stranger than we ever expected.
So, did you read a lot of science fiction books growing up? What kind of books were you reading?
I did. I read pretty voraciously. I was the kid who read the dictionary. I was a big reader. But science fiction was very important in our house. You know, we used to joke that like all answers in life could be and or all questions in life could be answered in Star Trek. And I had like a Star Wars Trivial Pursuit and watched Contact, which was a huge influence on my novel, dozens of times. So I think something that was really foundational for me was also not just loving science fiction, but loving science. I loved going to the planetarium. I loved space and I loved nature. And I really think that a lot of my, sort of work as a science fiction writer came from wanting to describe the world the way that I saw it, which was as a place full of, strange, fascinating, invisible signals.
I noticed on your website you have a Voyager's music playlist linked there, and I took a look at it. Tell us about the songs that are on this list and what they mean to you and the story.
Everyone can go check out the playlist. Some of them were songs that I listened to while I was writing a lot. Sun Ra was an artist who, for obvious reasons, I listened to a lot while I was writing, and he's number one on the list. And then some of them were songs that appear in the book. It's All Coming Back to Me Now by Celine Dion, makes an appearance in the novel. And so much of it was about, whenever I work on a project, I like to have a playlist to kind of drop me back into the mood of the book. That writing a book takes years and years, and you need to find some toe line back into the emotional truth of the story. And music has always been an easy way and such a pleasurable way to find my way back into kind of the heart of what it is that I'm writing about.
Meg Charlton is the author of Voyagers. It's What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski.